Hi and welcome to It's About Youth. I'm Fana Shea and this is the show that talks about issues that matter to youth. For now, we have seen across the news, across the globe, countries are suffering from the brunt of climate change. From scorching hot weather in China and Europe to massive flood and landslide in India and Pakistan. And Malaysia is no different. We can feel the heat here in Malaysia, as well as the massive flood that we have over the past 2 years. Now, ahead of state polls, we'd like to talk more about where climate action stands, especially when we factor in youth and their role in wanting to safeguard the earth that they would inherit. So today with us, we have two very special guests, Cameron from My Hutan, which is an initiative under Undi 18 that promotes more awareness on environment policies, issues, as well as co-founder of Undi 18 himself, Tharma. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Right.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
I don't want to scare people when we start, but I just want to see how severe it is, the effects of climate change in Malaysia, just to sort of wake people up as we start this conversation. So, Cameron, if you may enlighten us, how is climate change affecting Malaysia, especially over the past few years?
Sure. I mean, thank you so much for having us. Climate change in Malaysia is actually affecting us more and more as the years go by. I think the most obvious impact is the extreme weather events that we're seeing. You know, you hear about the, well, I personally suffered the floods that happened in Klang Valley.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, right. Those floods were terrible. But I mean, like, those floods happened in the East Coast annually. You hear about now floods that are happening in Baling, in Kedah, down south in Johor, on the East Coast, on the West Coast. I think that's really what we're seeing as the one of the biggest impacts of climate change in Malaysia, because it affects people so directly. But the indirect effect actually is you're seeing a shortage of things. I think, for example, there was some news a little while ago on there was a shortage of yellow meat. Suddenly, people couldn't eat noodles, right? But that's actually a climate change impact because India stopped allowing imports of wheat to Malaysia, and they stopped imports of wheat because they were facing heat waves, and that is a direct impact of climate change. So going forward, I think the impacts of climate change will not only be on us personally, but it will actually also affect us in terms of our food security. That's just two very broad impacts of climate change. There are certainly more, I think.
Yeah. I think, I mean, we've seen the news everywhere around the world now. People are suffering more extreme temperatures, drought, and at the other side, it's floods and landslide. But sometimes you don't see, you know, things like shortage of food, for example.
Exactly.
Right, Tharma. Is there any other effects of climate change that you think are severe but people might miss?
I think issues of food security is something that people often overlook. I mean, if you look at the context of Malaysia, whereby we are a net importer of food, so we are actually highly, highly impacted when there's fluctuations in production amount and production quantities of food producing countries all around the world. Of course, we've seen the Ukraine-Russia war. That's not a climate change issue, but you've seen how that has directly impacted the price of eggs, the price of poultry, because you're looking at the feedlot becoming higher. Similar to what Cameron has mentioned, that's also impacted in terms of our own cost of living. So essentially, I think we want to emphasize that climate change is not just an issue that we argue about theoretically in academia. It's not just an issue that will impact us in the long term, that we have to think about 20, 30 years from now. It's an issue that's impacting us now. And it's an issue that affects the poor especially. So we do have to take urgent action to change trends and make changes to reduce and mitigate the harms.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely getting more and more severe, especially if no concrete action is taken soon, like you said. Now, you guys have come up with a survey under My Hutan, and I just want to highlight, we'll put it up, you know, for the audience to see, but I just want to highlight a few things. This is with regards to how youth feels when it comes to climate change and as well as climate action. So 60% of youth surveyed, is over 1,000 youth here, right?
Yeah.
Believe they are knowledgeable about climate change issues, yet a resounding 83% believe that it is an important issue for them. So a lot of youth feel that this is, you know, this is an important thing that they have to monitor. More than two-thirds of Malaysian youth believe that protecting the environment is more important than growing the economy. Overwhelming 82% of Malaysian youth feel anxiety for the future due to climate change risks, you know, flash flood, heat waves. I want to discuss a little bit more about this first. So, do this actually encapsulate how you feel about the state of climate change in Malaysia, Tharma?
So we did randomized stratified sampling. So which means that we made sure that the right statistical methods were done. That's number one. Number two was we also had appropriate weightages for race, for gender, for state. Right. We also looked at state numbers so that we can represent how many Selangor youth are affected, how many Penangite youth are affected, how many Kelantan Terengganu youth might feel a certain way about this issue. So we hope that this gives you a very clear picture that when we say 83% of young Malaysians are concerned about climate change, and most importantly, not just concerned about climate change, but 83% have anxiety about their future because of climate change-related pushback or harms that's happening, right? Including major flooding, including huge environmental harms, climate change on a large scale. So these are key concerns that young people are facing. And we think that when young people are concerned, it means that they're going to vote in a certain way. Mm-hmm. They're going to choose leaders that represent them in a certain way. So I do think that it's something that that policymakers should take into account very seriously.
Right. Talking about policymakers here, there's also a survey in the MyHutan survey that you mentioned that says perceptions on government. So only a minority of Malaysian youth, 37%, believe the government is taking climate change risk seriously, and a similarly small percent, 39%, believe that government can be trusted to handle climate change, and only 39% of you believe that Malaysia is prepared to handle extreme weather phenomena and other effects of climate change. Cameron, is this telling of what the government is doing right now? Is this something that is shocking when you talk about with youth on these stats?
All right, so I think just for some background, we actually planned the survey in late 2022. We did this thing called the National Youth Climate Consultation, where we gathered around 100 Malaysian youth and sort of workshopped how to get the survey done in order to reach most Malaysians, in order to hit the really important point, in order to get like that representative sample of how they feel about the environment. So we didn't expect that the government would change in November. Mm. But nevertheless, the survey itself was conducted March 2023. So the data is, in a word, it's quite interesting. In saying that, however, I think there needs to be some leeway when we talk about how the survey portrays what you think about the government. The government is new, and the way I like to think about it is when you get into a new car, you don't really know how to drive it properly, you don't know how deep to press the clutch, you don't know how much to give the gas, etc. But I think the thing with the survey is that it's interesting because it does show that the youth have a very concerned, so to say, a concerned outlook on how the government is responding to climate change. And this is something I think that the government needs to take into account. I think if, regardless if they're new or if they've been there a while, if the public, especially the youth, think that only 37% think that the government's doing a good job, they need to take that into account and they need to really tweak their policies, make climate part of the agenda in order to raise that number up, I think.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to poke you a little bit. Sure. I understand the government is new, but it has, for quite some time, make certain announcement on especially on climate change policies, on climate change bill coming. So that aside, how do you think, Tarma, management of climate change risks so far with this government?
All right. In terms of the action so far, of course, as Cameron rightly mentioned, it is new government, right? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to these kind of processes and policies, it often does take time. However, I do want to also emphasize that the work has already been continuing for a long time. As you rightly mentioned, the Climate Change Act, there's also other legislations, especially in regards to renewable energy, especially in regards to ecological fiscal transfer, that has been implemented across multiple governments. So it's really also a question about what is a matter of priority, and also what is the communication that's being done on these particular issues. So based on what we've seen and based on what we've surveyed at the moment, many young Malaysians, number one, is that they don't believe that the government is either, one, doing enough, or number two, they don't believe that the communication is reaching them enough. So I do think that that shift in communication is something that the government might be or might need to do to explain that, hey, we understand that this is something that you're concerned about, And these are the mitigative steps that we're taking. I think these are things that sort of allay the fears and reduce that sense of anxiety. That's number one. Number two is that I do believe that there is a strong narrative, especially when you look at the global demand for change, the global investment climate, especially when you look at the balance of economics versus climate change regulations and climate change policies. I do think that there is a real opportunity for this Madani government, this unity government, to say that we are strong in terms of trying to fight climate change, trying to address concerns of environmentalism, and therefore we're trying to address through huge economic measures and simultaneously solve huge environmental issues. And these are things that are very doable, and there are many mechanisms that can be used together with the global community, together with global investors, to make these changes happen. So I do think that it's something that the government could improve more, but so far, from what we're seeing is that there have been a few announcements, but really not so much.
Nothing has taken off quite yet.
Correct, yeah.
Right. We want to talk more about those measures, those policies, those key changes that you want to see in the government, especially ahead of state polls. So we'll be right back after this break. Hi and welcome back to It's About Youth. I'm Fana Sheh, and today I'm joined by Cameron and Tarma from Undi 18 and My Hutan to talk about climate action, especially ahead of state polls. Now, I understand from the research that you guys have done, based on the youth that you've surveyed, there are some climate demands or climate action demands that the youth want, especially ahead of state polls. Cameron, you mind elaborating a bit further on this?
Sure. So, from the results of the Tuntutan Iklim Belia, we came up with five tuntutan. So, number one, that would be a complete moratorium on all logging activities. Coupled with that is a comprehensive review of all logging laws in Malaysia. We demanded pedestrian-oriented public transport and urban planning policy. We demanded for the implementation of environmental financial instruments. That includes EFT, that includes carbon taxation. We also demanded for 50% of all electricity needs of all government buildings to be generated from renewable energy. And the fifth one is this is really important, especially going into the state polls, is an overhaul of agricultural sector laws, because those laws are on the state side rather than the federal side.
Now, why have you arrived to these five demands? Are they immediate demands, or what's pressing here about these five demands?
Sure. I think the reason why we came to these five demands is because, well, for one, I think My Hutan thinks EFT and other environmental financial instruments, they're really important in trying to tackle the climate issue, especially in Malaysia. I think with regards to the environment, one of Malaysia's biggest problems is that we log too much. That's why we also came up with the logging moratorium, because we really do believe that logging is getting to a really bad state, shall we say, in Malaysia. I think when we were doing our preparation for the survey, in the back of our minds was Bukit Cheraka. So Bukit Cheraka dropped on us like a bomb, and we really thought that, you know, this cannot stand anymore. With Bukit Cheraka, with what they tried to do with Hutan Rimba TTDI, we really did think that logging was a big issue.
And those places are actually quite close to the hearts of the people.
Yes, yes, definitely.
I live by 5 minutes from Bukit Cheraka, and I understand the plights of people who live near there. Yeah. What about other measures that demands that you listed there?
So I think the most relevant now would be the overhaul of agricultural sector laws. Mm-hmm. We talked just now about the fact that food security is a climate-related issue. Not only is it a climate-related issue, it's a people-related issue. If you don't eat, you don't live, I guess.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, so with the fact that environmental degradation and climate change is making food security more and more of a problem, we saw that an overhaul of agricultural sector laws, and specifically in order to empower small modern farmers, was a really, really important step, especially in order to for Malaysia to face the impacts of climate change, which we are seeing now. Just to share with you, there was a paper from UKM in 2013 that said climate change-related factors were causing between a 13 and a 30% reduction in paddy growth in Malaysia. So that's a really big issue, right? So if we do not adapt our agricultural sector to face these issues, to mechanize in order to promote modern farming, we will really have a problem. And these problems stem from one source, which is climate change.
So I just want to add very quickly to what he said. In terms of agriculture, it's also about land use and who are we giving the land to. Often what we've seen so far is that that four state governments, and especially look at the PRN season, right? There's a lot of power on land that belongs to state governments under the constitution. So what happens is that a lot of state governments give off their land for developments that may not be sustainable, right? Mm. To hotels, to malls, to shopping complexes, yes. to housing development. And often, are these houses even being bought up? Are these malls even being used by people? But they are taking away this land from farmers, from food agriculture, agricultural producers that are using that land. They're taking away from fishermen. So these are all having a multiplier impact onto our food security in Malaysia because we are having unsustainable economic development and having lots of white elephant projects. So there is a need to review, as Cameron rightly mentioned, how state land use laws and how that impacts food security and also overall agricultural and also climate practices.
Yeah, I mean, when you said just now, there's also a matter of livelihood for these small farmers and also fishermen and all that as well, and how to make it so that it's more sustainable, that action that we're taking, right? Mm. Right. Okay, so this survey comes at the right time because it's very near state polls. I'd like to ask Tharma, why is it important actually for Ardun to be aware of these demands and how much power or jurisdiction actually they have over environment issues or what happened to our land? I mean, you mentioned a little bit just now, so let's elaborate a little bit further.
Sure. For those who are out there who know about environmental issues, who are concerned about it, here's the truth, right? Ardun's and state assembly persons have the most power in Malaysia when it comes to climate, land, water resources. When it comes to forest areas, they have the immense amount of power because of how our constitution works. Under our federal constitution, the federal government can sort of set treaties, can sort of set agreements, can sort of set grand frameworks. Mm-hmm. However, in terms of implementation, in terms of the authority on how land is being used in the first place, most of the land actually belongs to state governments. And there's huge, truly huge powers that belong to the Menteri Besar or the Chief Minister, in terms of how and who he wants to give that land to, right? And it just takes a single signature, right, to just give off pieces of land without any accountability. So we've had many cases of corruption, many cases of lack of transparency, and many cases of behind-the-scene dealings that are happening, including political donations that are being impacted. But most importantly, and that's the reason why it's so important to elect Ardun state assembly persons and also your chief minister, your Menteri Besar, that is accountable, that is transparent, and very importantly, that cares about environmental issues. And also another element I also want to mention is that your state assembly persons and your state government chooses who are your local councillors. And local councillors, again, have a huge, you know, power in terms of what are developments being allowed in your micro area. What are developments being allowed in terms of your roads, in terms of the shops? How does it look like? What is the urban planning that's going on? These are all have huge impacts. And while we always talk about federal government, and we are always angry about what the federal government can do for us, we too often forget the huge power by the state government and also by the local councillors that we keep forgetting about and that we need to emphasise on.
Right. I'm assuming, of course, Cameron, you would agree with what Tharma just said.
Of course.
But I think I'd like to know, over the years, right, has climate action or climate change risk, for example, become an increasingly important factor when actually, you know, for youth to secure their votes, especially, ahead of state polls, ahead of general election even? Has it been an increasingly important topic that you see or are concerned about, that they want them in their manifesto, that they want them to do something about it?
I think so. I think you can't run away from the problem when you see floods happening in your backyard, you see farmers being displaced, you see the price of food increasing dramatically. And I think for Malaysian youth especially, a lot of us are inspired by the climate action that's happened abroad. I think everybody knows who Greta Thunberg's name is. And for good reason. I think she's doing really, really important work in inspiring people to say, enough is enough. We actually need to, you know, to take this into our own hands. I think a lot of youth now are demanding more climate responsive leaders, especially going into elections like federal elections or state elections, because I think they know that ultimately they are the ones that will have to face the brunt of climate change. I think that's one of Mai Hutan's driving aims, is the fact that we are not, for a while we were not enfranchised to make the decisions in order to stop this disaster, which is currently hurtling towards us. But yet, we will be the ones that will have to manage it, or at least have to live with it when it gets to the point where it does become a disaster.
Right. Now, when talking about state polls again, you know, talking about, you know, what politicians are you know, going down, lobbying about, as a developing nation especially, Malaysia faces this unique challenge of balancing economic growth as well as environmental sustainability. And when we say economic growth, I think it also comes to the factor of, like you say, cost of living, employment, which is topics that are important to youth as well. So how can these two objectives be effectively harmonized? I understand from your survey, you say, you know, more and more youth are more concerned about climate policies as opposed to economic policies. So if you mind elaborating a bit further, how can politicians or governments per se harmonize between these two goals? Whichever can go first.
I can go first.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I think my quick take is that we've had so many models that has proven that focusing on environment and climate change is not something that contradicts to growing the economy. In fact, if you look at data globally, we've seen that there has already been a decoupling between economic growth versus the amount of carbon produced. Right, that's been happening in a lot of developed nations. And the fundamental reality is that it's because how we run our economy has changed. Right, we look at service economy, we look at finance economy, even industrial policies. There are ways for us to regulate and manage to mitigate certain harms that are out there. So it's all about having that awareness and trying to balance it out. And it's completely feasible. It's completely doable, and in fact, it's been done all around the world, right? That's the first part. Number two is that what we always encourage, especially in the context of Malaysia, is that how do we look at certain investments and evaluate whether it's good or bad, right? For example, we've seen recently, like a recent announcement by the government in terms of electric vehicles, right? There's huge gung-ho, huge rah-rah and all that stuff. And so number one, that shows that the government can invest in environmentalism and economics at the same time, right? There is some sort of incentive over there. So it's not something that's completely unknown to them. Mm-hmm. But I also want to point out this, that about 60 to 90% of the energy that we have in our grid is produced through, greenhouse producing sources, right? For example, from natural gas, from coal. So the question now is that how do we change our grid production? How do we introduce more renewable energy? How do we have more investments globally, but also from local entrepreneurs, and allow the regulatory framework to become easier? We've started this conversation back during YB Ubin's time when she was a minister, but how do we make it easier for grid access to be done, right? These are all conversations in terms of policy that will help us to make that transition between saving the environment and also growing the economy much easier.
Okay, talking about doability, feasibility, this is a new government, and there are obviously challenges when it comes to implementing policies, especially more hard-hitting policies that attack with most impact, right? Cameron, if you do mind sharing some of the challenges and ways to address when it comes to introducing and implementing climate action in Malaysia that politicians that have state polls can take note of, governments can take note of?
Well, I think the most important thing is there needs to be leadership. I think the big issue with answering that question, right, how do we attack climate change, how do we, you know, manage it, is the fact that there's a massive amount of inertia behind us. A lot of the older people in government now think that it's gone on, it's okay lah, right? It's worked for however many years it has, why should we change it now? You know, blind to the fact that it hasn't worked. We're seeing, you know, climate change related impacts impacting Malaysia harder and harder and harder every year. So there needs to be decisive leadership, and there needs to be someone in the driver's seat that goes, we can't allow inertia to dictate how we manage our affairs anymore. I think another challenge is, I can bring this perspective because I'm a student of public policy, is that climate is regarded as an intractable problem in public policy. When you think of a public problem, climate falls under intractable, some even might say like a wicked problem, as in it's a problem that you can't solve. Now, that's a really bad way of thinking about things. Mm-hmm. But the impact of that is that if you think about it that way, policymakers won't touch that issue with a 10-foot pole. Because, you know, if you try as you might, you're not going to, you know, reach a manageable solution, because the problem at its crux is one that you can't really find the source of. That's not a very good way of thinking about it. But I fear that there are people in places of power that think that way, and that might be one of a very big challenge to solving climate change. We need younger people. We need more driven people. We need people with a vision and with a mandate that says, I don't care if it's an intractable problem, or if people say it's an intractable problem, we're going to find a solution whether or not it kills us. Because if we don't, it will kill us as well.
Yeah, I think it's also like keeping pace when it comes to demanding for climate action, and wanting, you know, your government, lobbying to your government, making sure that they do address climate change risks as soon as they arrive, right, for example, or even before preventative, for example. Right, we are short of time, unfortunately.
Sure, no
I
worries.
Would like, however, short, brief
yeah.
message to either politicians or youth when it comes to demanding for climate action and making sure that climate action is in their manifestos and making sure that it's a priority ahead of state polls.
Check out the MyHotel survey, first and foremost. Know that the youth are behind us. It's not just us, two of us speaking out here alone. Most importantly is to go out and vote, and very importantly, to speak out, to talk about why climate matters and why leaders must prioritize this, not just economics or not just other local issues, right? Climate matters too, and climate is a local issue, right? So I think that communication is very important. If we voice out together, I believe that politicians cannot ignore us.
Cameron.
Okay, I agree with what Tharma said, but to all the voters out there that are going out to state polls, please remember that apathy is the bane of democracy. If you don't care, nothing will happen. And in a democracy, you are the governor. We govern ourselves, basically, right? So if you don't take that first step in order to, you know, choose the leaders that will actually listen to you and the leaders which have believed in tackling climate as one of their most important issues, then we're not going to get out of this together, lah. So please go out to vote and please choose the right leaders that will get us out of this.
On that note, with great power comes great responsibility.
Absolutely.
So, right. That's all the time we have, unfortunately, for It's About Youth. I'm Fana Shea. Thank you so much for watching.